down low. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to What Time Is It? The First Life International Web Radio Show about watches and the people who love them. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Jerome Pinnell, speaking to you live from Austria today. Notice I didn't say Switzerland. I said Austria. Pretty close. Welcome to the show, everybody. This is a live show. If you want to call in, and I think you do want to call in today, believe you me, the number is a U.S. number, 760 area code 683-2652. 760-683-2652. You're listening to the only live horology show where you, the listeners, get to call in and talk to watch industry shakers one-on-one, live, up close and personal. Hello, everybody. Greetings from Salzburg, Austria today. I'm actually on the road, traveling on the duty, and I'm up in Salzburg, capital music, place of Mozart. I love Mozart. I visited his house and watched a couple of clips from the Amadeus movie inside his birthplace. So I'm still walking on air about this place. It's definitely a dreamy town. And speaking of superstars, our guest today needs no introduction. So I'm going to give her a very short one because everybody knows her. For decades, she's been a horology rainmaker. There isn't much she doesn't know about watches and the people who love them, actually. She knows everybody in the business. And pretty much everybody's come to her for advice at one point or another. And as a matter of fact, that's how I met her a little bit over a year ago when I was starting out in the business. She was actually kind enough to not only just talk to me, even though I was a nobody. I'm still a nobody, but even worse of a nobody back then. And she's offered advice and insight ever since then. I've ran tons of IDs past her. And whenever I needed the scoop somebody or product or watch, she's on IT too. And she's been really teaching and kind from the beginning, and I really appreciate her coming on the day to talk. I was a nobody, but she's naturally nice and genuine, and I'll always be grateful for that. Anyway, she's an accomplished journalist, writer, publisher, watch expert, and I mean that in the real sense of the word. Our guest today is no other than Elizabeth Dorr. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth. How are you?
Hi, Jerome. Thanks so much for having me today. Wow, that was quite an introduction.
Sorry, man. thanks again for coming on the show. You do me and the show and our listeners a great honor. Where are you talking to us from today?
I'm talking to you from the place I live. That's Karlsruhe in Germany.
Okay, so we're close.
Yeah, we're not that far apart, yeah.
Cool. Hey, quick question before we get going. I just got to ask you this. What watch, if any, are you wearing today?
I'm not wearing one today at the moment because when I'm sitting in my office working, I usually don't wear one. It's disturbing with the keyboard, I find. But at the moment, I'm wearing a Graham Swordfish because I'm testing it. I do a series of test reviews for World Tempest, which is one of the websites I write for. And at the moment, both the French editor-in-chief and I have Graham Swordfishes on.
Awesome. And so speaking of publications, World Tempest, QP, Revolution, International Watch, you've written for everything, every publication, every journal, every magazine probably. Can you give us a quick list of all the major ones you've contributed to over the years?
Well, you just named most of the major ones I write for. Those are probably my bread and butter, the ones you just named. But I also do a number of lifestyle magazines in the USA, which include Elite Traveler, Cigar Aficionado, and DuPont Registry.
Cool.
And various magazines in other parts of the world, like the Hourglass magazine, which comes out in Australia and Southeast Asia. And I was editor-in-chief of Wristwatch Annual for, I believe it was 15 years. I just stopped doing that last year to pursue other interests.
Other interests. Gotcha. So how many years total have you been in this business? Exactly.
I've been doing this for 20 years. I went to my very first Basel World, which was called the Basel Fair at that time in 1991.
Gotcha. So I want to go back to the origins, to the sources. How did you decide to do this? How did you decide to dedicate your professional life to horology? Was it a family thing? How did you fall into that place?
It's an interesting question. And, I don't think anybody in this area grows up and says, I want to be a watch writer. They kind of fall into it. And I think everybody in the watch world, unless you're a watchmaker who usually comes from several generations of it, I think you just kind of fall into it. And so it was with me. I had moved to Germany in 1988 after graduating college and doing some grad work. And I started working at a publishing house in Germany. At the time, that publishing house more or less did publications on automotive themes, magazines. We did a magazine called Ferrari World, that kind of thing. And in 1991, the publisher bought a license from another publisher who was in Italy at the time, who was trying to make a family of magazines throughout the world. That magazine was called Orologi da Polso.
Okay.
And he bought the license to make the magazine Armbanduhren, which was also in the same family as International Watch, which is how I made those connections. So I began my run basically in the watch world because a publisher asked me to research into the watch world as we were considering making the watch magazine. And back then, there weren't any really. In Germany, there was one. In the U.S., there were two. It was fairly uncharted territory. So it was an exciting time.
So was it, being a woman, was it weird for you getting into this, I guess what would be termed a man's world, really, you know, horology and all that? Were you one of the first gals to do this, or how was that?
Yeah, that's a good question, because that has not been easy. In fact, when I began in 91, I wasn't a writer. I was actually, that took a while. I was actually doing the other things for the magazine. I was in charge of the circulation, the marketing, the ad sales, all the other things that go along with the magazine, and wasn't really writing yet. It took a while to discover that side of myself, but I became very interested in watches right away. I knew I loved it in that area. And it took a few years before I really realized, oh, I can actually write this stuff too. So not only when I started out, not only was I a woman, I was young. I was in my early 20s at the time, mid-20s. And I wasn't in one of those positions that would command power. So I really had to put on iron elbows and fight my way up into a position, learning how to become respected by my peers who were all male.
And did you have a mentor, not only to learn all the technical stuff, but just to get you, you know, help you out with those elbow things you're talking about?
Yeah, the elbows I learned all by myself.
Okay. Did you have somebody watching your six, backing you up on that, or not?
You know, I'd say if I had anything like a mentor, it was probably the guy who ended up being the editor-in-chief of Armbanduhren. We kind of charted the uncharted territory together. His name is Peter Braun. He's a very respected and very wonderful person, a great writer, one of the best in the business, without a doubt. We always had each other's backs. And as he was writing about it, he understood the technical bits of it way faster than I did. So he tended to help me out at the beginning when I needed it. Soon thereafter, I became friends with watchmakers and learned most of my knowledge firsthand. And I would credit people like Martin Braun and Bernhard Lederer with really being so patient with me and spending hours and hours explaining things.
Wow, how nice is that? Advice from the top guys. Cool. So, if somebody came to you and said, you know, I want your life, I want to do what you're doing, what you've accomplished, what kind of advice would you have for a younger person starting out in the field?
Ah, that's a really good question as well. I think, you know, I think I fell into it. I absolutely fell into it. I can't say that if you had aimed to reach this goal, it would be an easy road. I think wanting to get there would be harder than just accidentally getting there. But the advice, any advice I would give someone starting out would be to learn the basics of writing, A. B, learn a foreign language, French or German or both. That would be the best. And C, study the basics of the technology. And the best way to do that would just be by picking up the book Watchmaking by George Daniels and reading it cover to cover and ingesting it. And that would be my biggest piece of advice for the basics. And moving onward, once you've got those basics covered, the best thing you can do for yourself is learn how to make relationships, networking.
Yes. That makes a lot of sense to me. I want to talk about your fun, exciting, luxurious lifestyle at this point. Now, you travel all over the world. How long do you find my travel, actually? Honestly, I mean, you've always gone, right?
I'm sorry, the line was a little fuzzy right there. I didn't catch the question.
I'm curious about travel. Often the move. How often do you travel every month?
How often do I travel every month? In a good month, I'm gone somewhere every week. And in the spring, I'd say from February through June, that's usually the case. July, August, calm down because here in Europe, the summer holidays are taken very seriously.
Yes, they're religious taken.
Yes. And November, December tend to, after the Grand Prix in Geneva is over, it tends to calm down a bit too, which is thankful because it's a tough life sometimes.
I know.
Being on the road.
Yeah.
Being on the road is great fun, but you still have to get your work done.
Yeah. No, definitely. It's this thing. Do you completely national this?
Oh, you were fading in and out again, Jerome. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Traveling?
I still didn't catch it.
Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes, now I can. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm on a Wi-Fi as I mentioned. I don't have a hard connection in the hotel here, so I apologize for cutting out every so often. You do international traveling mostly, right?
Most of my travel I can say is done in Switzerland. I travel from Germany to Switzerland and back most of the time.
Gotcha.
Some overseas travel, depending on what's happening in the world, where and by whom.
Got it. So tell me, Elizabeth, what's the most amazing manufacturer you've ever visited and why?
Whew, just one?
Well, we only have 20 minutes. I'd love to listen to any of them.
Just off the top of my head, and it's really hard to narrow the factories down to just one. Off the top of my head, I'd say I've seen two that blow me away in comparison to the rest. And they're not going to be everybody's choices, but I would pick Lange & Söhne and Jaeger-LeCoultre for two very similar but different reasons. Both of them are incredibly complete. They can do almost everything in those manufacturers. Lange, because it's the technology, because of its historical circumstances, all the technology in that factory is brand new and state of the art.
Okay.
And they work with materials that others don't, and they also make their own balance springs. And I spent one entire afternoon in this little workshop just looking at the balance springs and learning how they're made. It's
nice.
It's mind-boggling, and no one else lets you in there to see this. It's incredible.
Well, you can't this to every think of her.
I'm sorry. You were in and out again.
I'm sorry. You have open doors anywhere you go. I'm not sure.
Oh, Jerome, I know this is a live show, and I'm very sorry to make you repeat that again.
No. Can you hear me now?
This is like
a phone commercial. No, I'm saying you have I want to talk to you about events as well. I know you went flying with Tutima in California. Talk to us about that. What was the most exciting thing what was the most exciting event you went on with a brand like that?
You know, all the events are exciting. For each and every one has their own elements that make them all exciting. The one that I just went on in Tutima, we went to California and flew with the world's foremost aviation expert for aerobatic planes, and it was the most incredible experience ever. They taught me how to loop and do hammerheads. I was allowed to fly the plane. We spent two full days flying in the beautiful California sun. I mean, it just doesn't get better than that. Sometimes it doesn't even feel like a job. But then reality session, when you get on the airplane and you have to write up the story, like dead tired and it's due in, you know.
Yes.
But the events are cool, and the brands go a long way to make you feel welcome and offer you an experience like no other. And even if it's just going to a factory, listen to that, to watch how the watches are made and seeing the balance springs come to life when they're put together is incredible.
Yep. No doubt about that. Who's the most amazing horology person you've actually ever either met, interviewed, or written about, you think?
I'd have to say that that honor would go to George Daniels, simply because he's so legendary and he has accomplished so much in his life. And to he welcomed me to his home a few years ago, and I just felt so honored to be speaking to him and being able to recap what the incredible things he has done for our field, you know, in writing.
Right. Well, do Brent actually inside or
I'm sorry, Jerome.
I'm sorry. Let me know if you can hear this. Do Brent actually
now
come
I got
to
it.
You for
yep.
consult? Do Brent actually come to you for consulting advice all the time?
They do sometimes, particularly new brands starting out, and I have to say that I've never taken 1 cent for it because I really think that it would compromise me. So if people
sure.
come looking for advice, I'm happy to give it, but I won't accept payment for it.
Good. Gotcha. And I'm curious if you think over the years, have brands changed their attitude towards journalists or such as yourself or not? And if so, how has the relationship changed, do you think?
Well, for me myself personally, I think my relationship has changed in the fact that it's gotten deeper. I think they've gotten to know me and I've gotten to know them over the years, and we both know where we stand, the brands and I, each other. Attitudes toward journalism in general, I think that the whole bloggerscape has changed things a little bit.
Okay.
But I can't say that it's changed it for better or for worse. I think it's like a new breed coming in with a new style, and there's much to be said for it. In fact, I welcome it. I think it's great. I've learned a lot from the bloggers.
You do. That's interesting. So you think brands are doing a better job of communicating as the years go by, not just because of, you know, blogger interest, but just overall in general? You think they're getting better at it?
Not really. I think that they have set attitudes toward it, and they spend a lot of money researching how to communicate. I'm not sure that they're doing it better than they have. I think they've gotten a few lucky breaks. I definitely think that the advent of social media has helped everyone, but I don't think you can chalk that up to the brands, and now they need to learn how to harness that energy. They communicate pretty much the same quality that they've always done. It takes somebody who knows what they're looking for to find the real things.
Got it. And do you have a preference? Do you have one you could say, you know, they're really the best at it? One brand that just right off the top of your mind, these are the best guys at communication right now.
I like the way Jaeger LeCoultre tends to communicate, simply because they have a very personal way of doing it. They prefer to build communication and relationships rather than broadly communicate. I personally like that because when I go looking for what I need, it's easy to attain.
Okay.
But I can't say that they're overall the best at communication. I think that wouldn't be true.
Fair enough. That's pretty good. And about this game on stuff for print, we print for this and every digital, or how's the future and all that stuff?
Your Wi-Fi was out again, Jerome.
I'm sorry. I'm asking.
Now you're good.
I'm asking, when you compare, you know, blogging and digital communication versus print, do you think print will ever disappear? Do you think digital will overtake print, or do you think they'll always coexist?
I think they'll coexist. I think that the watch consumer, somebody who's interested in finding out about watches, likes the feel of paper and loves to look at glossy photos. And I think that those make a big difference. I think that they will continue to coexist, but I also think that it may do so in a changed form than it does now.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. And I obviously want to ask you about if you're cruel, but the embedded in 10 years, do you really think we're out of the crisis or not? And I've seen it last year. Where do you think headed was?
Oh, boy, Jerome, I'm so, so sorry.
I'm sorry. Let me repeat. Where do you see the industry headed in the next 10 years, and do you think we're out of the crisis at this point?
Yes, I think we're out of the crisis. I think, speaking for myself, in Central Europe, it wasn't really even noticeable. I think in the outer markets that were the markets bringing the brands their big money in recent years, I think there it was highly noticeable. But I do think that we're out of it. I think people who like fine watches and do buy them are back to doing so. I realize that the brands have been kept above water by Asia in the last 2 years, but I think that going forward, right. Asia will not be the sole market.
And that's funny. I was thinking about that. I saw Asia and China. A lot of brands are the farm on China. Anyway.
I didn't catch that. I'm sorry.
Sorry. I'm asking you what you think. What's going on in China? A lot of brands seem to be betting the farm on China. Do you concur? And do you think that's wise?
I think it's wise that they're taking China into account these days. I do think that China kept a lot of the big brands above water in the last 3 years. And I do think it's very intelligent of them to be taking their tastes into consideration as well, but they shouldn't forget the markets that have put them where they are because they're all coming back.
Yeah. Do you see the United States coming back in a big way in the next few years?
I do. And do you know how I can tell? I can tell by the fact that my publications that in the last 2-3 years that were kind of quiet, they're all back in full force looking for stories again. So I can tell that it's back.
You saw it there, like the Did you hear me?
I only caught about 3 words of that one. No.
I'm sorry. Tell us what you saw at Basel this year that caught your fancy. What are the 3-4 top pieces you saw there?
Oh, Basel was fantastic. I was so thrilled about all the creativity at Basel this year. If I had to pick 3 or 4 top pieces, I would definitely go with the Opus 11. That is just an incredible, incredible piece with a never-before-seen display that it really takes a genius to come up with. I really loved the Corum Golden Bridge Automatic. I think putting an automatic movement into that design was a stroke of genius and really technically quite impossible. I really liked what I saw at Zenith. I think that their direction is fantastic. They're appealing to the everyday guy again with pricing, with looks, with visuals, and with solid, beautiful technology. I really, really like what Zenith is doing.
Good.
And pretty much everything that every independent watchmaker made.
Good. Pretty much everything, huh? Okay, well, I'm sure they'll be happy to hear that. Hey, Elizabeth, we're almost at the end of the show. I did have a question from a buddy of mine on Twitter. He wanted to know, if you can hear me, between the Zenith Elite Ultra Thin and the Nomos Zurich, which one would you pick, he wants to know. This is my buddy Tom Hanks on Twitter.
Ah, hello, Tom Hanks. Yes, I know him from Twitter as well.
We all know him.
I had to pick one or the other, that's tough. That's a really hard question. My heart often goes out for Nomos because they're so underrated. They just really don't get their enough recognition, in my opinion. But if I honestly had to pick between the Zenith Elite and the Nomos Zurich, I'd probably go with the Zenith in this particular case because the visuals appeal to me just a tad bit more. But I do own 3 Nomos watches, and I would put my money down
wow.
on Nomos any day.
You know, it's funny. I actually it caught my eye. I was walking in the street in Salzburg today, and I actually saw the Nomos watches in the window, and I stopped in my tracks. It's pretty funny that Tom should ask that question. Well, Tom, you got your answer there from the top expert. So you know, go ahead and get yourself a Zenith. Hey, Elizabeth, I got 3 questions I ask every guest who come on the show, and I'd like to pose them to you. If you can hear me, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yep.
Wow, this is great. Long live Wi-Fi. Okay. So I'm thinking of supposed to be.
You said long live Wi-Fi, and then you went out, Jerome.
Yeah. Are you good? What was being just questions for you quick? Different in the oneness. What were you doing, Elizabeth?
Nope, I didn't catch that one.
All right, let's try again. If you were not
okay.
in the watch business, what would you be doing, Elizabeth?
If I were not in the watch business, I knew I wanted to write, and I would probably be a journalist working for a music or a tennis magazine. Those were my interests when I was growing up.
Gotcha. And, Elizabeth, who's the most important person in your life, if you can hear me?
My family. All
gotcha.
Three, my kids and my husband, yep.
Fair enough. And if you can still hear me, what's your favorite time of the day, Elizabeth?
Well, I know what my least favorite time is. It's 10 after 10.
Yeah, okay.
But my favorite time of the day is about between 5 and 6 in the morning when the world's very quiet and just waking up, and I feel energetic.
Gotcha. Elizabeth, thank you so much for participating in our show here, and I really apologize for the technical hurdles. This is what you get when you travel, and I apologize for that and the struggle.
No problem for me.
I hope you could hear my apology. And I, again, thank you so much for coming on the show. I look forward to hope maybe we can hook up on my way back. That'd be really cool.
We'll keep in touch. And,
thanks for sharing all the insights you have with our listeners here. And again, very grateful for your participation. And take care, and I'll see you soon.
Okay, Jerome, thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. Well, minus our little technical hurdles here, hopefully you caught most of this interview. Elizabeth is she's a sweetheart, man, and she knows her stuff. She's the go-to person. So thanks a lot for tuning in. Sorry for the hassles, for the technical hassles, that is. And this is it for us. My name is Jerome Pinault. My website is JeromePinault, PINEAU.com. I'm a social media strategist in the luxury industry. But you knew this. The website for the show, whattimeradio1word.com. Stay tuned for information there pertaining to our upcoming guests in the next weeks. And next week, we're back in Switzerland with a normal connection. So hopefully we'll be doing a little bit more consistency in the audio there. Thank you, folks. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, Elizabeth Dorr. And talk to you guys next week.